you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 197 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host once again. Before we get started today, I need to do a couple of housekeeping things. Number one, if you were paying attention to the intro last week for episode 196, I giddily mentioned that we were recording our first episode of the year 2000. I don't know where I've been for the last 20 years, but it's the year 2020. So if you caught that gaffe, recognize that I didn't catch it. Neither did my producers. I was listening to the episode in the car and almost drove off the side of the road laughing at myself. So I hope you find it as funny as I did. The other thing is I need to set the record straight on something that was said. I repeated this inaccuracy a number of times in a number of different arenas, so it's worse than it sounds. So I had made the observation. I did so at a conference that I spoke at recently. I did so on this podcast on a number of occasions, and I attributed it to an attorney here in the Washington area by the name of Seth Price. Now, Seth is a fabulous attorney, has a wonderful firm, Price Benowitz, a pretty big firm here in the Washington area. He's also the owner of a digital marketing company. And I had read a quote of his suggesting that the annual revenue for a law firm necessary to make search engine optimization a viable financial adventure was in the neighborhood of $250,000 to $300,000 annually. Now, what I did was I conflated that, and I think in the quotes that I've had, I also included pay-per-click in that description, saying that it's only if you have a law firm that's generating $250,000 to $300,000, that search engine optimization or pay-per-click is a viable tool, according to Seth Price. Well, a couple of listeners pointed out to me that's not what Seth said. And then all of a sudden, Seth contacted me and said, that's not really what I said. Pay-per-click, you can, in fact, start off at a very low price. You can budget it. That process, and there are a lot of firms that will provide that service to you at a very reasonable cost. Search engine optimization, that's another story. So I was wrong, and I just wanted to set that record straight and apologize to Seth for putting inaccurate words in his mouth. He's far too smart to make the same mistake that I did. So if you've been going around re-quoting me, quoting Seth, make sure you set the record straight because I was wrong there, and I apologize for that. And now, on to more mundane things or more interesting things, depending on your point of view. Today, my guest is Elizabeth Miller. Now, Elizabeth is a law firm management consultant. And it's interesting because we've had a number of different types of consultants on the show. We've had people who are law firm coaches. We've had people who provide virtual assistance in terms of making the management of law firms more practical and more cost-effective. We've even had folks that provide services, virtual lawyers, so you can even outsource some of your legal work to make your law firm more economical and cost effective. What Elizabeth does is she provides virtual or remote law firm administrative services. And to the extent that you can kind of segregate the administrative functions in your office, the things that are solely designed in terms of managing the business of the office itself, not necessarily of marketing, although there can be an overlap there, or not necessarily paralegal type work, although there may be a little bit of overlap there. A lot of offices have pure routine administrative functions that need to be done. Well, all of them do, actually. And for some law firms, it makes sense to outsource that. And that's what Elizabeth provides through her service. She also has written a book called Lawyer to Law Firm. And that's available. We'll talk about that a little bit. Her co-author, Joran Jenkins, as you will hear, was a previous guest on our show way back in the day. So it's a long-winded introduction to what I hope is a very interesting conversation with my friend Elizabeth Miller. Elizabeth Miller, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you.
Well, I'm delighted to have you with us today, Elizabeth. Do you go by Elizabeth or do you go by Liz?
Actually, you know, it's funny. About 15 years ago, I decided it was time to be called Elizabeth because It sounded more adult.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get anybody to, so
I'm you couldn't Liz, get any traction on that, huh?
Yeah, no, I'm going to be Liz until the day I die, you know.
Well, Elizabeth Liz Miller, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Well, it's actually quite an interesting story. For the first 25 years of my career, I worked as a paralegal. And in about 2012, I transitioned to big firm law office administration. I had been doing it previously, but for very small firms. And then in 2013, my father committed suicide, and I needed a change. So for 2014, I worked as a paralegal again. And then at the end of 2014, I decided that I wanted to go back to doing law office admin, but I wanted to get out of Florida. So I moved to Montana. In the middle of the winter of January 2015. Anybody that moves to Montana in the middle of January is really got to have a couple of screws loose, trust me. But anyway, 3 months later, I was in a car accident and I had to come back home and get treated and, you know, whatever. I took some time off and I interviewed for a job at the end of 2015 with an attorney who I thought it was a full-time administrator job. And I interviewed with everybody and he said, great, we want to, you know, give you a position. And he said to me, what hours can you work? And I said, what are you talking about? All the hours. I can work full-time, you know? And he said, oh no, did you know this was a part-time job? And I went, oh crap. So anyway, before I could excuse myself, he said to me, wait a minute, I got a great idea. What about if I could get you other people that you could do this work for in addition to me? And I thought, okay, you know, we'll try this. Well, before the month was out, I had three more clients, and from lawyer to law firm was born.
So almost a job sharing environment to start with.
Kind of. You know, I was doing for this one and that one and, you know, whatever. But it was December when I interviewed with him. So, you know, not much is going on. So, but by the end of that year, by the end of 2015, I had a total of four clients. And then come January, it just hit like you would not believe. And I've been busy ever since.
And so tell us, what is the environment like today? I mean, are you still working for a group of attorneys or how are you situated as a business?
The way that I'm situated is an attorney, you know, will call me or whatever. You know, hey, I need billing done. I need this done. I need, you know, some attorneys need like the full, you know, everything. And then some places, you know, some little guys are just like, oh, well, you know, I just want my billing done, or I just want this done or whatever. So I basically have attorneys everywhere. In fact, I have six attorneys outside of the state of Florida as well. So it's really kind of cool. And actually, I'm getting ready to hire somebody this year, which will really be neat.
So is it more of a distributed, say, paralegal service or law administration services that you offer a different variety of things to individual law firms? Or do you have a standard type of you know, package that you try and provide across multiple firms?
Well, I actually, what I tell people is I help lawyers with managing the business of practicing law.
Okay.
So that is really administration. I've gotten out of paralegal work a long time ago. I refer those, you know, when I have people that need paralegals, I refer them to somebody. But it's basically everything that a full-time law office administrator can do for a law firm is what I could do, but fractionally, you know, just billing. It can be everything. But, you know, for most of these guys, because a lot of them are solo and small firm practitioners, you know, and let's face it, they don't really need somebody full time, you know, because half the time you're going to watch the grass grow or the paint dry or whatever. And that just really doesn't work.
Yeah. So I can see where this would be useful for people, just as you said, a solo or small firm practitioner who doesn't have or doesn't want to spend time, doesn't have the expertise, or doesn't want to spend the time themselves to do the administrative functions of running a law practice. And those of us who do that, we know that it can be a time-consuming, you know, process. And billing is just one of those administrative functions. Obviously, it has a lot of importance because, you know, money is everything to the viability of a practice. But, you know, things, mundane things like ordering supplies and making sure that the stationery is properly accounted for, and all those kinds of ministerial tasks that take up time and could be offloaded to somebody like yourself.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the thing is that, you know, if it's a choice between, like, I'm going to do payroll and I'm going to do whatever, or I'm going to work on this client file where I'm getting paid, you know, several hundred dollars an hour, like, really, what makes more sense, to order supplies and do payroll or to work on this case? So, of course, it's work on the case, you know, but, you know, billing is a very big thing, you know, and it's really, really funny because, you know, I see attorneys all the time, and I will say to them, well, what's the status of your billing? And they kind of like put their head down and they go, oh, well, you know, we get to that when we get to that. And I thought, you know, I think to myself, are you kidding me? Like, the whole point of being a law firm and taking in money and whatever is to bill the clients. And when you're like 3 months behind on your billing and you're still working and you're still putting out money, but you're not bringing anything in, like, what's wrong with this picture? Sure. You know? So, you know, billing is a very big thing that I do for a lot of attorneys, because it just, and it doesn't make any sense for them to try to do it either, because again, it comes down to that, am I going to do billing or am I going to work on a case where I can make X number of dollars, you know, and pay somebody to do the billing? Well, of course, it doesn't make sense for them to do the billing. You know?
So let's explore that just a little further. When you say you're doing the billing for a law firm, you know, typically, you know, firms have different methodologies or ways they go about billing or invoicing their clients. Some may do so directly from their case management software. Mm-hmm. Some may have a separate billings application that they use that may or may not tie into their case management software or their accounting software. Hell, some people still have paper and pencil and ledger books and are billing, you know, with a handwritten letter or to clients. So, and I have to admit, the last time I saw that, I was completely stunned, but okay. Is there a standard process that you use, or do you then have to become conversant in all of these types of platforms and tools in order to be able to offer those services to potential clients?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you that I met with a client the other day who does exactly what you were talking about, puts pen to paper kind of thing, and doesn't have a billing program and doesn't have any kind of, and I was like absolutely mortified. I thought, oh my God, this has been years since I've seen something like this. So needless to say, we're going to work them into some kind of billing program or something. But yes, actually, I am very conversant in several of the programs, Clio, MyCase, Practice Panther, you know, all of them. And it's because, you know, it's so diversified and people are using different programs for different reasons and, right, you know, whatever. So, you know, I have to be very up on what's going on if I'm going to service these people.
Right. So then I would guess typically then a law firm, if they retain you for that function, would then provide you login credentials to their account, and correct, you would then go in and create the bills for the outstanding clients and services to be collected that month.
Correct, but it's actually a lot more than that, Neil. They have to put in their time, first of all.
Sure.
That I can't, you know. I mean, for some of them, I can create some of it, but it's really better for them. And I try to tell them, keep your billing program open during the day. And when you do something, bill it. Because let's face it, you cannot remember. I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning. I certainly cannot remember what I did a week ago on the Smith case. You know, you're going to lose time. I mean, that's just the way it is, you know. But, you know, they put in their time, and then, you know, it's a matter of generating the bills, sending out the bills, making trust account transfers when the money's in trust, mm-hmm, collecting from clients, even collecting not just what's due on the bill, but the replenishment as well, because attorneys should never be working without something, you know, that they're going to bill against. You should never be billing against nothing, you know?
I call that billing against collections.
Yeah. So, you know, today it's really, you know, today more than ever, they have to stay on top of that. You know, money's got to be there.
I can see how, you know, going in, let's just, you know, play it out. Let's say I'm a Clio user and I give you access credentials to my Clio account, and you go in at the appropriate time and you generate the bills. Now, typically, those billing invoices then would go out to the client electronically, correct? If they're coming from Clio.
Yeah.
And so you monitor that to make sure that they go out correctly. And then when the payments come back, again, people will be using different types of payment services, whether they're actually receiving payments directly within a platform such as Clio, or whether they're using, you know, QuickBooks online to receive payments, or LawPay, which is my favorite. How do you gain visibility on that as it comes back in and reconcile that with the billing system?
I would need to have access to the, to any accounts that people are paying on, like, for example, LawPay.
Okay.
You know, and that's usually not a problem. I mean, if they're going to trust me with their billing program, then obviously that kind of goes together.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I'm just trying to figure out the mechanics, you know, of how that, of how this would work. Not necessarily the trust factor. I assume we've overcome that hurdle in the hiring process.
I would have to have access to whatever I would need to have access to enter a payment, to even the client ledgers, you know, ledger payments need to be entered on the ledgers, where does the money go? Does the money go to trust? Does the money go to operating? Does, you know, all those things are all involved in the billing. So it's a big undertaking in a way. You know, I can't, it's just really so important, Neil. And attorneys just are like, I don't know, it's like last on the list of things. Oh yeah, I'll get to the billing someday.
Well, and those people who aren't up to date with their billing are going to be the ones that are having difficulty, you know, paying the bills ultimately. So let's talk about some of that. I mean, there's a lot of overhead associated with operating a law firm in terms of paying all of your vendors, whether it be you know, paying the licensing fee for your software platforms that you use, or paying rent, and or you know, paying for the various things that you need to purchase in order to keep a law firm up and operating. Do you provide that service as well?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. And I will, as I said, I will do anything that an in-office law office administrator would do. I just do it on a fractional, you know, basis. Basically, you know, like I said, you know, with a solo or small firm practitioner, it's not a full-time job to be the law office administrator. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it just, it doesn't make any sense. And that's kind of really how I got started in this, because it just didn't make sense to pay somebody full time, like I said, that was going to watch grass grow or paint dry or something.
You started your law practice to ditch the firm life and be your own boss, but your practice is running you. The good news, being an attorney entrepreneur doesn't have to be this hard. Jesse and Megan, the lawpreneurs behind Jurisdiction, are working to build a new generation of solo practitioners who love being lawyers. This year, Jurisdiction is introducing a new program, Next Level Law Practice. Next Level Law Practice is a rigorous training program that provides the tools and business fundamentals for estate planning attorneys to start and grow a profitable and streamlined legal business. Next Level Law Practice gives you access to videos, worksheets, templates, one-on-one coaching, and live group sessions that allow you to ask questions and learn on your own schedule. To learn more about the program, visit thrivejd.com. That's thrivejd.com. They're even offering an exclusive coupon code for the Law Entrepreneur listeners. Just enter the code TLE150, that's like the Law Entrepreneur 150, for a $150 discount off your course registration. And welcome to the show, Jurisdiction. Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/law entrepreneur. Well, again, let's explore how that happens then. So let's say you're working with a law firm and you are responsible for doing all the purchasing on their behalf for the things necessary to keep the law firm afloat. Would you be waiting for the attorney to say, email you and say, hey, Elizabeth, we need more, printer paper, take an example. Or are you setting up a system that proactively accounts for those needs and you go out and make those purchases without, item by item authorization? How would that work for you?
Well, especially today, because, court filing and all that, usually you don't need paper, right? So there's, we don't, like years ago, we would have been ordering tons of paper, So it's basically on like an automatic kind of, okay, we know we're going to use these many cases of paper. We're going to use these many, whatever. And just going in every month and ordering, whatever they need. Now, I have an attorney that does family law work and he does trial notebooks and they go through notebooks like crazy. So I know that if he's got a trial coming up, that like to look a month ahead and say, he's got a trial coming up. Let me see how many notebooks he's going to use and let me get those ordered so that when it's time to do them, they're not scrambling around looking for trial notebooks or trying to take other ones apart or something like that.
Sure. Okay. Now, the other thing that strikes me as a law firm administrator is there's a lot of overhead associated with keeping all the software platforms up to date, all the licenses up to date. Sometimes also, the training courses that are associated with each of those applications. Mm-hmm. Is that something of a service that you provide?
Yes. Yes, I do. I have attorneys who, this expires then and everything is calendared. Everything for every attorney that I have is in a folder. When their licenses expire, when they need to be renewed, when they're, when they take a CLE course, for the Florida bar or, whatever. All that information is stuff that I keep and stay up on, next week there so-and-so is, or next month, this is expiring. We need to pay this. We need to do that. We need to whatever. So that they don't have to give it a thought. I mean, it gets taken care of. I pay it. It's done. And that's it.
How about in the area of marketing for that law firm? Again, there's a lot of attorneys who, for one reason or another, have an aversion to the idea and the work behind marketing their law firm. I'm not sure that that's actually a law firm administration function, but I can see where some aspects of the marketing process could be more administerial in nature, as opposed to say, let's say, content creation. Right. So do you have a role in that for some firms? Is that something that you do?
I actually do have a role in it. I have a couple of clients that I call it social media, that I do, post things on Facebook and writing blogs to their website.
So you are addressing content then?
Yes. And, when it's something big or something that I can't handle, I do have my resources, to say, hey, I need this or I need that or, whatever. But as far as, posting to Facebook and writing blogs and posting to LinkedIn and Instagram and all that kind of stuff, yes, I do that. And I do that as, either a standalone because I have about 10 clients that I do that for, or I do it as a package, for a couple of people that I have the whole firm, everything for.
Sure. Sure. And I would also think that things like, for lack of a better word, mass mailings to our customer list or our client list, our past client list, if we're servicing those clients in terms of trying to follow up with them after the matter is completed and just stay in touch and top of mind with them, that's kind of an administerial slash marketing function that takes a lot of time on the attorney's part, but would be something that you could provide them, you know, quite easily.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's once you get into it, you get into like a role of, you know, a role of what would you say? You know, it just becomes normal and you do it and you're constantly checking up or whatever, you know, and the attorney really doesn't have to be bothered with any of this stuff. I mean, I have one attorney that we did a very big marketing, like an in-person marketing networking kind of thing that I needed him for. But other than that, they don't really, you know, unless suddenly business were to drop off or something, and then they would come to me and say, hey, what's happening? You know, it's just business as usual.
Now, is there, I know you're located in the Tampa area. Are your clients primarily geographically located in that area, or are you spread out across the vast wild blue yonder?
My clients are mostly, and I can't really say, like Tampa, Clearwater, St. Pete, Brandon. I have a couple of clients on the east coast of Florida. And then I have Texas, Ohio, New York.
Okay, so you're geographically dispersed. Yeah. So you're not limited by having to be nearby. You can work across the internet and using the various tools to provide your services to just about anyone.
Right. The only thing that I would be limited in somebody that is not within a drivable geographic location is that I can't go there unless, like, you know, to fly or something like that. But, you know, let's face it, with the internet today, you know, and everything being the way that it is, I mean, you know, we even hire virtual assistants, you know, so anything is possible, you know, now that we have internet and all this computer technology.
Absolutely. Now, I know you wrote a book, right?
I did, yes.
So tell our audience a little bit about the book that you wrote.
Well, it's called From Lawyer to Law Firm, How to Manage a Successful Law Business. It was probably, I guess it was about a year, it was about 2016 when Jordan Jenkins, who is my co-author, approached me and said, hey, have you ever thought about writing a book about law office administration? And I very looked at her and I said, are you kidding me? I don't know enough about it to write a book. I mean, who would want to read my book? So she said, well, you know, give it some thought. And I went home and I thought, you know, I'm gonna sit down and see what I can come up with. And within 6 weeks, I had written 40,000 words. And which I know doesn't translate much, but that's about 130 pages. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, wow, this, you know, and I went to Jordan and I said to her, you know what? I think that we have enough here to write a book. And I think that, so what I did was for a long time, I had been writing articles for Law Office Manager magazine and doing webinars for them and that kind of thing. So what I did was I took some of those articles and I worked on them and turned them into chapters. And lo and behold, we have a book that is like 240 pages or something like that. So anyway, we went ahead and in May of 2017, we put it up on, you know, Smashwords and all this other stuff. And we got enough sales to make it into a bestseller. And so the book is still out. I got to write a new one probably within the next year, just because there are some things that are updated or whatever. But right now I'm selling the book on my website, which is the cheapest place you could get it, for $49, only because I cut a deal with Cooley Law School, is now using the book as a teaching guide. Right. And I wanted to make it affordable for them. So if you go to Amazon, the book will be $149. But if you go to my website, which is From Lawyer to Law Firm, on the first page, you can buy it for $49.
No, that's quite a savings. Now, for listeners who are intently parsing this, they may recognize the name Joran Jenkins, as Joran was a guest on the program way back on episode 63, which aired in May of 2017. So at that time, Joran and I talked mostly about the collaborative law process, which she was heavily involved in. So it's interesting, we've come full circle here, that we have a guest on episode 197, who has ties back to a guest from episode 63. So that's pretty good.
That is really cool. That is really cool. And that must have been right around the time that we were getting ready to launch the book.
Exactly. It's about right about that time. So anyway.
Wow, that is really cool.
Elizabeth, it's been tremendous having you with us today. Tell our audience how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up in any way or talk to you more about what you have to offer.
Certainly, they can, first of all, my email address is liz.managementconsultant@gmail.com, and there's no S on the end of consultant. My telephone number is 813-340-9569. They can reach out to me on Facebook, obviously, and become a friend. My website is www.fromlawyertolawfirm.com. And if anybody has any questions or needs any help, even if they just need a one-time whatever, they're welcome to call. And, advice is still free. And, I'm more than happy to give it away if somebody needs help with something.
Well, I can personally attest from connecting with you on a number of different social media platforms that you are very free with the advice and very giving of your time, and that's to be commended. So above and beyond that, Elizabeth, I want to thank you for being a guest today on The Law Entrepreneur, and let's stay in touch.
Thank you for having me, Neil. I really appreciate it. And yes, let's stay in touch.
Well, that will do it, fellow law entrepreneurs, for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors this week. That would be Ruby Receptionists, Jurisdiction. Be sure to visit us on our website at www.thelawentrepreneur.com or check us out on our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. Just search for The Law Entrepreneur. You'll find us. Make sure you consider joining our private Facebook group, where we'll be having some new offerings starting the first of the year. So I want you to have a great week, and we'll see you next time. And thank you for listening to The Law Entrepreneur.